It's Wednesday, October 7th, 2015. You're moving at the speed of creativity with Wesley Fryer, narrowcasting from Oklahoma City. Well, good evening, and welcome to the first of four podcasts from the 2015 OTA Encyclomedia Conference. OTA stands for the Oklahoma Technology Association, and maybe last year, I guess, the conference, formerly known as Encyclomedia, merged with OTA, and OTA typically was in February, and unfortunately it was cross-scheduled with the TCEA conference, the Texas Computer Education Association conference, which I have actually not been to for over a decade. But it was always cross-scheduled at that time. And because of some state politics and different things, the State Department of Education no longer was able to sponsor Encyclomedia, which has been mainly a library media conference. I think it was the best conference of all the K-12 conferences that we have had in our state surrounding technology. I mean, OTA's been good, but Encyclomedia was even better. Well, anyway, they've now combined, and they happen in the fall, right about this time, about October 6th or 7th. And so this year I had the opportunity to attend both days and also attend with our technology team from Cassidy School. And it was really, really great, and got to see lots of friends and have lunch with folks and see some great sessions. And so what I'm bringing you tonight is the first of four sessions. I'm going to publish this one here on Moving at the Speed of Creativity, my primary podcast channel. And this is a session called Sharing Student Work. And this was actually at the close of the day, so it was session 8, and had folks there, but definitely, you know, fewer numbers at the last session of the day. And I have shared this session at conferences before, but for this time I put together slides and I kind of crafted a little more thoughtfully the messages that I wanted to share before sharing student work. And I had hoped to be able to present this session with my wife, Shelley, who continues to be a third and fourth grade teacher at Positive Tomorrows in Oklahoma City, which is a private school serving homeless children. And, unfortunately she was not able to get away. She's still not, they haven't hired a full-time assistant for her classroom. And, so it's just really, really difficult for her to be able to get away. So I shared, several different examples of media from her classroom. And this is in terms of like my own evolution of thinking about educational technology and, media projects and student work. You know, this represents, kind of a new synthesis of several ideas. And one of the big ones that's new, and I'm including in the podcast show notes, the Google slide presentation that has all of my slides and reference links, is this idea of teachers setting up a home-based website with at least four channels to be able to publish to. And that would include a blog, a place to share photos, a place to share audio, and a place to share video. And so it also ties in with the Digital Sharing Conference, which we will be hosting at Cassidy School a year from November. It'll be in early November 2016. And I really hope for that to be an opportunity for teachers that may not be the early adapter innovator teachers, but what we can consider to be early majority teachers. If you think of Everett Rogers' technology adoption curve, that, you know, places teachers in or folks who adopt technology in different groups: the early adapter innovator, the early majority, late majority, and then the laggard group. And so a lot of times at technology conferences, I kind of think we tend to orient things a little bit maybe more towards early adapter innovator. I don't know. But I really think that we need to give teachers opportunities to create these digital spaces to publish in and encourage this idea of sandboxes that I talk about, and, you know, have these platforms in place so that we can, you know, then essentially pour content, student work, into those digital spaces. So anyway, great opportunity to kind of refine and further develop some ideas. I'll include the link, of course, in the podcast show notes to the webpage that has all of the reference resources. You can get to that if you're just listening to this by using my shortened URL, wfryer, W-F-R-Y-E-R, .me/swork. That's Sierra Whiskey Oscar Romeo Kilo. So S-work for student work. And that'll forward you on to a Google site that I've set up, and it's got the slide presentation as well as other referenced resources. So this was definitely the best Encyclomedia OTA conference ever in terms of Wi-Fi in our Cox Convention Center in downtown Oklahoma City. It was really great, fast all day. I had downloaded a copy of my early presentation on STEM that I shared with Amy Leffelholtz and Michelle Freeland. And, you know, did that as a backup just in case the Google presentation didn't work or YouTube wasn't fast enough. And it was great. It was really super. So I want to also direct you to the secondary podcast channel that I maintain, and I have not published a ton in it recently. Today during one of the sessions, there were actually three sessions that I wanted to be in, and I audio recorded two of them and then Periscoped the other. And so I will be publishing both of those sessions, as well as the STEM session that I did with Amy and Michelle on Fuel for Educational Change Agents. And you can find that supplementary podcast channel on the website audio.speedofcreativity.org. So without further ado, it is back to the Cox Convention Center today at the end of the day at 2:30 p.m. for a session on sharing student work. Well, good afternoon, everyone. We'll go ahead and get started. I am happy that you're here for session 8, our last session. If you did not get a small sticker, I've got some stickers that have a little QR code and the link to this presentation. This is a presentation that is shared as a Google slideshow, so that means it is completely online. All of the links are clickable, and therefore it's really good to be able to get to it because then you don't have to write down links and things like that. Depends. I think if you're on an iPad, maybe everything may not be as clickable as the web browser. But my name is Wes Fryer, and I am thrilled to get to share with you for 45 minutes about sharing student work. I believe we need to share more of our students' work and encourage them, of course, voluntarily. This isn't an involuntary thing, but to have them voluntarily share their work. I have been inspired so much as a teacher by the work that students have made in other places that other teachers have shared. I think it's one of the most powerful ways we can help the light bulb come on for ourselves and for other teachers about, why would I do this? What can I do? It's so easy to be overwhelmed with technology. And I probably say that every year, every session, right? But it's not going to change. More information, more devices, more possibilities. I mean, I'm overwhelmed going to 7-Eleven, right? I mean, it's crazy how many drink options we have, how many cookie options there are in the store. I mean, we live in an amazing time. But I think that there's a lot of power and simplicity and also just the human voice. Some of the projects I'll share with you today are just students who are reflecting with audio about experiences that they're having, about things that they're learning or perceptions they have. And so even though there's lots of complexity and lots of apps and lots of devices, simply sharing our voices, having our students get that invitation to share their work, and then really celebrating student work. These are things we all need to do more of. So today's session is available, as I said, as a Google presentation, but of course no one wants to type in a Google presentation. You want a short way to get to it. So I have a shortened web address, actually a site that a friend of mine, Tony Vincent, kind of helped me, he wrote a blog post about how to do it. It's an open source little tool, but it's my own URL shortener. So WFryer is my Twitter ID. If you go to wfryer.me/swork for student work, it will bounce you to this presentation. And I'm also audio recording this, and so I would love if you want to share this out with people who are not here, or you want to go back and, oh yeah, what was that Wes said? I'll be making that link available on the slideshow and also on my website. I believe as teachers, One of the best metaphors for what we try to do in the classroom is the gardener, the farmer, the one who cultivates, right? And I think one of the things we want to have happen as teachers or as parents is we want to see the fruit of learning. How do we know we've had learning? Well, what is the fruit? And I'm not talking about the grade card. I'm talking about evidence of changed perceptions, evidence of learning, kids showing what they know. And I think digital media can be like that fruit. You know, none of us really today are able to look inside each other's brain. I have a friend far smarter than I who has a dual doctorate in cognitive neuroscience and philosophy. He was at DARPA running several multi-million dollar projects before he got out of the Air Force. He works for Lockheed Martin right now. One of the things he did when he was in the Air Force was he went down to Houston where they have two fMRIs that are side by side and they could do that kind of testing. And I thought, man, Bill, are we going to reach that day where we can do that with kids? We strap things on. At the Makers Faire in New York 2 years ago, he did a DIY encephalogram where you actually do that. You tape stuff to people's heads and you can actually see brain waves. And okay, so we're lighting stuff up based on the brain. But it's seriously hard and it is not possible today. And I don't even know, it'd be kind of scary if we did that where we, you know, we brain scanned. How do we measure learning? We need evidence of learning. And so digital media products can be that way. And I would encourage you to think about the podcasts or the radio shows that your kids make, the blog posts they write, the videos they create. That's like the fruit that you grow as a farmer. How many of you are gardeners? Anybody have a garden? Kind of hard, right? Especially if you're starting out, you know, you want to be mentored. There's a lot of good analogies to this. I have learned to do a lot of it by being mentored by other teachers. That's how students and other teachers learn. We mentor as we share. So digital media can be the fruit. Unfortunately, my wife could not be here, and there's a misprint in the program. She is not at Cassidy School. She teaches third and fourth grade at Positive Tomorrows, which is a private school not far from us here downtown, for homeless children. So all of the kids at her school come primarily from three different shelters. We have seven different homeless shelters, actually, in Oklahoma City. And she is really passionate, as you'll see in this video, about student voice and about her kids having opportunities that they wouldn't have if they weren't there at school in the classroom. So anyway, I'm going to play this. She applied last year to PBS. They have a program called the Digital Innovator Program. And I am so proud to say that she was selected and got a all-expense trip paid to ISTE in Philadelphia. And I got to carry her bags and assist her on that trip this summer. And then she got to do some workshops for PBS. But as you listen to this short video, which is like 2 minutes long, what I want you to listen for is, what does she say about student work? Okay? Because student work is a piece of this, but student voice is another piece. Okay? And whatever our standards change to, and whatever the legislature says, student voice is still going to be important. Kids being able to understand their words are powerful, and they make a difference, and they can actually have a reach far greater than anything we ever dreamed of probably growing up. So we'll take a look at this real quick and I'll see if my fancy Bluetooth speaker setup was going to work.
Hi, I'm Shelley Fryer. I am a teacher at Positive Tomorrows in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. I teach a self-contained classroom, third and fourth grade. We're kind of a special school. We are a small private nonprofit school for homeless children. We have been one-to-one iPads for the past year, and we're really excited about the things that we're making and sharing and doing in our classroom. We've been using Book Creator to create our own books. Most recently, we're working on a project for Black History Month where they're doing biographies. And so the thing that makes this so engaging to my students is that it's a great combination of taking different resources, both digital and video and print, and putting it into something that they're very proud of. Even students on various reading levels are successful with that. And so that's been a lot of fun. And we're able to save those into our iBooks collection. We are doing a lot of neat projects, particularly in science. And one of the great ways that we have to get them to do reflective writing and talk about what they're learning and to show me what they know is to spend time on our kid blog. And that's so fun because they're able to take pictures and then blog about that and then share that with a huge wide audience. And then just the engaging action of getting responses back is very highly motivating for them. Because of the iPads and just some of the neat things that we're being able to do in the classroom, I have been seen as the technology expert. And so it's been a lot of fun to share that with other teachers who are trying to integrate the iPads and computers in a very meaningful way in their classroom. Those are some of the fun challenges that I have. It's been very engaging for my students, and it's really giving them a voice.
Okay, so I'm going to jump out of the presentation, just open up onlinestopwatch.com. I'm going to set it for 90 seconds, and what I want you to do is I want you to turn to your neighbor, introduce yourself, and if somebody's by themselves, get them to come over so they're not alone, and I want you to talk about those two things. What did you hear Shelley say about student work and about student voice? All right, you have 90 seconds. Go. It's a little loud. Ouch! Ouch! Okay. By the way, this will just be an ancillary thing, but sometimes the small things are what we really take away and mean a lot. I use this all the time. There are no ads that come up here, and in fact, I don't have any ads at all that play on YouTube or anywhere else. And that's because of an extension that I use. There's a few different Google extensions. You can use AdBlock and some other things, but this is one a friend of mine, Ben Wilkoff, told me about this summer when I was in Colorado. uBlock Origin, it is free, and it blocks all of the ads that come on websites, including YouTube, and that is awesome because, you know, sometimes advertising can be helpful, but a lot of times I don't want to see that. So, anybody want to share? What's something you heard her say or really resonated with you that you picked out that had to do with student work or student voice? And if you just say your name and where you teach, that would be awesome, and we'll get a couple people to share. I'm good with wait time, so it'll be all right.
First of all, what was
uBlock? It was called uBlock Origin. Yeah. I actually wrote a post this summer called 7 Essential Google Chrome Extensions. That one and one called Tab Suspender have changed my life. They're just really, really good. But student work or student voice? You can volunteer your neighbor, too. Okay, good. You're going to be brave. Thank you. Tell your name and where you are.
But we felt like student work was a published product and that a voice was a message. And then our conversation kind of went in the difference between the two and how a message, especially with the kids that she's teaching, it would be very empowering and probably life-changing to feel like you have valid thoughts that other people take pride in and respond to.
Listen to, take seriously, you know, give feedback. I mean, it's actually, I think, true for all of us. We all need to be listened to. We all need to be taken seriously. And yes, publicly. And I didn't put the slide in the presentation. I was going to add it. But it's like beyond Google Classroom, Edmodo, or Seesaw. Okay? Those are all great learning management systems where you can put content, but it's like a walled garden. This is public. This is out for others to see. It's moderated, so the teacher sees it first before it's approved, but it is public. Any other things that were said? Like I said, you can volunteer a neighbor. If somebody else said something, just kind of point to them and I'll coax them to see if they'll share. Right. This idea of audience. The audience is not just the teacher. We don't actually know exactly who the audience is. Some of these people who are the audience are mentors that come and read with the kids once a week, and we've got parents, she has parent volunteers at their school, and so they're kind of tied in now with some of the writing to be able to be that audience. But sometimes the audience is other folks, you know, in other places. That's different. That feels different as an assignment. So there is not a silver bullet in education other than passionate, awesome teachers. Okay. That is the silver bullet. But, you know, other than that, I mean, we can't say, yes, just having a blog is going to be magnificent for your class and everyone's going to want to write. No, not for everybody. But for many kids, having an opportunity to share in a public space and receive comments and to have that platform can make a big difference. And it's a lot different than just writing it for Dr. Fryer or for Mrs. Fryer or for whatever, you know, for the grade. All right. I think discussions like this are really helpful. There is a lot of fear. Nobody talked about fear here, but there's a tremendous amount of fear around student work and publicly sharing student work. I'm not going to really go through it in the presentation, but the link that you find, hopefully, when you scan the code or use the shortened address, is this page on a Google site. And in addition to having videos, I did recently a poll everywhere for this session. The question was, what do teachers fear most about sharing student work? Being judged by parents for students' poor spelling, fear of parent backlash, fear of parent criticism, getting sued, parent jealousy of their child not being represented. What I think is impressive is really not all that impressive. I think we totally don't pay enough attention to this. And I think one of the ways that we can encourage teachers to it's like swimming and getting into the shallow end of the pool and dipping your toe in is by showing examples and especially showing the success and the impact it can have on kids. So there are other resources here like sample permission forms, sample websites, you know, sample channels. This is something that's just a real passion of mine. And so I would love to also know from you, what do you think are some of those obstacles holding teachers back? Because if there's one thing we've had a lot of in education in the last 10 to 20 years, it's fear, right? I want to just scare everybody. I want to threaten everybody. I want everybody to be scared. And you might have even been to a session at this conference where it was all about fear and social media. There sometimes are those sessions that happen. So the last 4 years, I've been working on this project, which is now called showwithmedia.com. It is a free website. I've written ebooks that are $3 each that go with the first 6 of these 12 products. But this is a digital literacy framework of products that I think should be in all of our toolkits. Okay? Our kids should know how to create a radio show, how to make a narrated slideshow, how to make an ebook, how to make a digital story. And when you go to each one of these, you'll find a definition of what it is and suggested tools, because you could use an iPad or a Chromebook or a MacBook or different things. But then my favorite part are the examples. And that's what I'm going to show you several of today. And we'll talk about a little bit our examples of student work. I like metaphors and I like pictures. Okay? And so here's the sandbox. I believe we all need digital sandboxes to play in. And here's why. it's pretty nerve-wracking to be in front of an audience, whether it's adults or kids, trying something new. You know? Is it? Yes, it is. How do we get comfortable using a new tool? It's by having a low-stakes environment where we can play and start to get comfortable and familiar with, oh, well, that's what can happen. And, oh, what do I do when that happens? And, you know, actually playing with it. My first book that I published in 2011 is called Playing with Media, because we need to play with the media and play with the tools to get comfortable. So I want to encourage you today to think about setting up, if you don't already have them, at least 4 channels for publishing. And I'm going to mention that in a year, in November, we're going to host a conference at the Cassidy School, where I'm the tech director now, called the Digital Sharing Conference. And it's going to be all about helping teachers create these channels. Today is like the awareness session. Here's what you can do, and here you can see it. I think we need opportunities to build these. So any guesses what that first one would be? What kind of a channel would that upper left corner be? A blog, a place to write text, writing, okay? And how many of you have at least one teacher in your building today sharing student work on a blog? Are some folks doing that? Okay, it's pretty rare. I'd love to amplify that even more. In fact, something else I don't have in the presentation, but we talked about at the Ed Camp in Choctaw, oklaed.us, I set up as a learning showcase, and we don't have any posts here of example work yet. The model for this was, when I was in UConn, we set up a site, showcase.uconnps.com, and this is to showcase student work, okay? Here are examples of projects, things that students have created, you know, prezzies that they did, videos they did, library integration projects. I think we need more of that. And so if you're sharing student work, tweet me. Let me know. I think not only can that give your kids a bigger audience to say, hey, comment on the awesome stuff that Ms. Henley's, you know, students wrote. It's also going to encourage more teachers, okay, to see the value and to think about doing this. Bottom left corner would be what? A podcast. Or I like to say radio show, because sometimes podcasts be like, what is that? I don't know a podcast. It's a little more mainstream. But a radio show, audio only. There's a lot of value in just doing audio. Because when we do video, it gets complicated, right? Is my hair okay? Is the lighting all right? What's behind me? You know, are you holding the camera still? Seriously, there's a lot of things that immediately come in when you shoot video. Upper right corner, of course, is video. I think all of us need a place to publish video, okay? Many schools today are not yet allowing teachers to publish to YouTube. If it's not YouTube, it needs to be somewhere else. I was in tech center in Tulsa this summer, and were using Vimeo. That's what they bought accounts for all their teachers who were flipping their classes to publish. Great. But we need a place to publish video. Why? Because video is so powerful. Oh my gosh, there's so much, you know, power in video. It's like the pencil of the 21st century. If you tell me I can't publish video, it's like you're taking away my pencil. Are you serious? You want me to teach today in the 21st century when I can't use, you know, the medium of our time? So that's something that takes work. It takes administration. It takes IT folks to come around. And then what's that last one going to be? Bottom right corner. Photos, right? Simply taking pictures of student work, of course, making sure the permission is there, that we've got, you know, approval from the parent and the child. That's critical. My wife, they call the kids that don't have permission the red shirts. Okay? Sometimes it's a custody situation. Sometimes it's a car incarceration situation. There's all kinds of situations. All right? We have 900 kids at Cassidy this year. Every single parent signed permission. Yes, you can publish my student's photo and work. You don't have anybody. Last year in UConn, I had 600 students. Each semester, I had about 3 that were on that list. Okay? So we ran the PowerSchool report that was on my desk, and those kids knew who they were, and we could take pictures of their work if they wanted to, but they weren't in the picture, and we respected that. So what I would like to do is basically use my wife's website to kind of show you a couple current examples of this, and then I've got some other examples if we have time to take a look at. I didn't put a slide in here, but I think as teachers, all of us need a home base where we can share stuff, okay? This is a Google site. I've used a Google site the last 2 years teaching STEM in UConn, And one reason that's important is we're always going to have links to show kids. We're always going to have something to say, I want you to go to this place. So if you have a home-based site, where do we go, Dr. Fryer? stem.westfryer.com. That was our website. That's where we started. So my wife's is classroom.shellyfryer.com. It is a Google site. We pay $12 a year, I think, to have her domain. So it's her address, and it's not sites.google.da-da-da. But I'm going to just go ahead and click this link, and it's going to take us out to her website, hopefully. And so as we scroll down here, she's got four channels. And I'm just going to go straight to radio show, all right? How many of you have created who's listened to a podcast of some kind before? All right, consumers, yay. Has anybody been on a podcast or made one? You've recorded one. Okay, one hand, not very many. This is a free app, the way she's doing this on her iPhone. It's a free app that's called Opinion. This stuff can get complicated. I've been making podcasts since 2005, and it can take a lot of steps. Another thing I'm convinced of is the more steps it takes, the fewer teachers will do it, right? Even if I know how to do the fancy way, I'm not going to do the fancy way much when I'm teaching 300 kids every week and, you know, it's just the reality of everything that I have to do. So this is an app that allows her to record segments, to bring in other audio, and even to move things around and trim stuff a little bit. And then it's hosted free on Amazon by this company. So what I'm going to do is just click on this latest episode, episode 18. They've been studying coral reefs, and let's have a listen. This is like 2 minutes.
Today is Monday, October 25th, 2015, and this is from 108 coming to you live from Oklahoma City. Our question for today is, what do we want to know about the ocean?
In room 108, we've been doing our reading research on coral reefs, and we've been reading and learning a lot about coral reefs. But living in Oklahoma, we don't have an ocean very close by, and many of us have never been to visit an ocean. So we have some questions we'd like to put out to all of our listeners. And if you would like to send us an email reply or a video reply or maybe even a podcast reply, we would love to hear from the experts who live close to the ocean or who work close to the ocean. So here are our questions for today.
Hi, my name is Aaliyah. My question today is, what kinds of animals live in the ocean, deep under the ocean?
Hi, my name is Amika, and do some big fish live
She's trying to read off the board right now.
In the deep.
I want to translate that question. Amika was wondering about the cleaner fish that clean the gunk from the other fish's teeth.
My name is Olin, and my question today is, do you think there are animals that haven't been discovered yet?
My name is Josiah, and why don't the big cleaner fish eat the little shrimp?
My name is Carter, and what do turtles eat?
My name is Kenneth, and I am asking a question of, in the deep, dark side of the ocean, what kind of animals live down there?
My question is, what are some of the deepest parts of the ocean that have been explored by people? All right, we hope to hear from you. You can email us at sfryer@positivetomorrows.org. You can go to our classroom webpage, classroom.shellyfryer.com, and contact us through there. We hope to hear from some experts on the ocean. Thank you for listening.
Bye. Okay. Yes.
Where is this voice? I mean, I know it's in the app, and I know you said it's on Amazon. How are people seeing it other than through her website?
So she tweets it out. So when she does that, she'll use a hashtag like OklaEd. There's a hashtag called Comments for Kids. What we're probably going to do, because this just was like 2 days ago, is directly message some people I know who live in Maine, some people who live in California, some people who might live in Houston, you know, and say, hey, do you have any, you know, students or anybody that might reply? Of course, it could be a retired person. This doesn't have to be somebody in a class. But it's on their website, and that's probably one of the most exciting things about doing this today is that we have social media like Twitter, we have Facebook, we have other ways to reach out and amplify and share. And, you know, before 2006 and or whenever Twitter was started, I mean, you know, it was harder. There were fewer people involved. I might have called somebody on the phone and said, hey, you know, my wife's just done this. You know, we have a relative who lives in Hawaii. I mean, it'd be kind of cool for her to, you know, even write a comment or something. So if we had a little bit more time, we would do another turn, pair, and share, and I would have you talk about the value of that. I'll share some of the things I think of. Number one, it's a low-tech bar, right? What was required for that? Her phone and the app. There wasn't special lighting. It's not a green screen. I mean, it was audio. She didn't have to get pictures that went with it. It was quick production. In fact, she did the clarification riding downtown with my son driving. He drives now. You know, that's why you heard the road noise. I mean, she was doing that in the car. But it's okay. I mean, if it wasn't easy and fast, it wouldn't be getting done because there's a lot of other things to do. But we heard the kids' voices. Did we see anybody's picture? No. Did they have to say their name? No. So from a confidentiality standpoint and starting to get, you know, your foot in the water of doing this, there are a lot of positives. So radio show, I think, is very underutilized and can be a great way to share student work. I'm going to go ahead and open up, read our class blog and talk just briefly about WriteAbout. I've used different blogging tools. The last 2 years we used KidBlog at Independence Elementary where I taught. WriteAbout, both KidBlog and WriteAbout, you now have to pay for. KidBlog was free and they actually took millions of dollars of investor money, which is kind of interesting. But they've improved and they've made it better on iPads and they've done good things. WriteAbout was created by several educators that wanted to create places for students to share their ideas. Not just in their classroom, because that's a little bit artificial. Like, I don't just blog for a class and then just leave it over here in this class blog. I'm sharing it with others out on the public internet. So this is her class's post. But if I click on posts, we can see all kinds of things that other kids are writing in other places. And then there's different categories. Like, there's a category. I think there is a. Is there a category for Minecraft? There's one for technology. Literature, science. So we could go in and just see what have people been writing about. So Reese just wrote this post about weather. Would you rather be in an F5 tornado or an F5 hurricane? That'd be interesting. So we could leave a comment for Reese right now. And I don't know, looking at that, what school Reese is in, where he is, but it's a way for the posts that are written to have a wider audience. I'll scroll down here a little bit to, let's see. Olin's post on my awesome park. He said, when I made my park, I liked the way my friends and I were given great ideas. I also liked how we were using kind words. We wouldn't correct each other. I like how all of us are friends and we like building together. And there's this picture. And so Mrs. Rowe, who I think is his mentor, has left several comments for him. And Miss Creighton left a comment and Olin commented back. And he can go in and edit and correct. I mean, that's something that he has a chance to do. This also lets the students post things just within their class or choose to do it publicly. And they've only been doing this for a couple weeks. They use KidBlog a lot this year, and we've changed, and so it's a little different. But that's called WriteAbout. YouTube. How many of you have at least one teacher at your school that has a YouTube channel? At least one. Yay! Awesome! So I'd love to know what those channels are, to share those when you have a video that you want to share. Like, Twitter is so good at being able to do that kind of thing. Say, hey, check this out. It's hard to know which one to choose. There's a lot of great ones that her kids did. There's research that they did, ebooks that they did. Here's one that they did a month ago.
Who I want to be in room 108.
Paper slide video.
I want to be a doctor. I want to work on
I want to be a lawyer.
I want to be a judge.
I want to be a teacher.
If what I am is what you need, then I'll stay strong that you want me. And I will always be the best me that I can be. If they want me, I am it. Have a dream, I'll follow it. It's up to me to try. Oh, I will be quiet about it. I keep on trying. I love it. I'll keep it stronger.
Paper slide video. So what's required to do that? Paper, pens, crayons, smartphone, tablet, something we can record. And Nate had to practice several times to get that timing right. Okay? I mean, I get emotional seeing that, man. Is Will.i.am going to sue them, by the way? You think he's coming after him? Copyright? No. This is called fair use. Okay? It's called remix. It's called using a portion of a copyrighted work and then creating a transformative work. It's not taking his song in its entirety and putting it right back out on YouTube so people don't have to buy it on iTunes. That's another layer to this, is what can we do fairly? And as your students and mine create stuff that's original and they take pieces and parts, it's called fair use. And if you run into difficulty with that, contact me. I'd love to help inform someone who may be thinking like, oh my gosh, we can never use a book cover on a book report. Well, actually you can. And we have this part of our law called fair use. And people have different ideas. They've heard different things about copyright. And that's important in this whole conversation. It's another reason people are fearful. Last thing is a place to share pictures. I've been sharing on Flickr for a number of years. I helped my wife set up some albums. They do field trips periodically. Again, they have to be careful who they take the pictures of, that they're not taking pictures of red shirts. Her rule is that she takes pictures of faces, but they can take pictures with their iPads of their work. So last year they took a field trip to the Coffee Creek Riding Center, one of the first times her kids had ridden horses and had a great experience. And so now they have these pictures that they can create media about in the classroom, right? They can make a narrated slideshow. They could, you know, just narrate one picture and talk about it. You can think about pictures as the raw ingredients of media projects. Not for a radio show, okay? Radio show, we don't need to have pictures. We need a script. We gotta make a plan, what we're gonna do. But we don't necessarily need pictures. If we do a narrated slideshow, we would. Almost every other kind of media project is going to benefit from pictures. So having a place where you share pictures. Google came out with Google Photos this summer, which kind of replaces Picasa, although Picasa is still online. Flickr is free. You have like a terabyte of storage. What does that mean? I don't know. It's really big. I've never run out. I don't think I'm going to. And so it's a place to share those pictures and then give a link so students can get to those pictures and use them. All right? So those are just four examples coming straight off of that website. And I would love for you to encourage and you yourself to build channels like that to be able to share student work. Question or comment, or were you just...
Well, I was thinking of the first one.
Okay. Well, let me ask it if you want to.
Yes.
Yes, absolutely. I'll talk about three here in just a second. My kid blog and Write About are my two current favorites, but all of these blog tools that are designed for schools and bloggers as well allow for moderation, and that's what, you know, you want to have. And you moderate the posts and you moderate the comments, so nothing goes out there until you see it and it's public. That's another misconception some people have, is they think that blogging is going to be the Wild West, like Facebook is, or YouTube now. Like, it's kind of the Wild West, and there's a lot of ugliness out there that is going on. When you set up a classroom site, you moderate it, and so you approve those posts. Here are my favorite audio apps. All of these are free. This one it says Pro, but it's still free. This lets you record audio, take a picture, and it makes a video that goes on your camera roll. So if you're using iPads, the camera roll is sort of like the common denominator between apps. Audioboo is one that I've used a lot. Shadow Puppet allows you to put pictures with it. iPadio is a radio show app. We've got about 3 minutes. I think I'll go ahead and play this one. I won't play the other ones. This is my favorite example of student work from 2 years of teaching STEM in UConn, okay? This is a unit on the science and technology of music and sound. I got the FOSS kit, borrowed it from our fifth grade science teacher. The kids have the string phone. They were at the center trying to understand sound, how sound transmits. And so this is about a minute and a half. Was fourth grade.
Hey, hello guys. Welcome back to another episode. This time that you can hear me.
This is Dr. Fern's classroom. This is Andrew, Madison, and Evan talking on this.
In today's video. Today is my birthday. We're basically recording this on same day that it's still my birthday.
Absolutely, Evan. Today is his birthday, and we're going to celebrate his birthday today.
But
I'm talking about that.
Okay. And also, welcome back.
Yay!
We have a scientific story for you.
Okay. We are talking about the glove microphone thing. Okay. Hit it, Andrew.
Well, the cup phones are special type of phones that have certain amount of things.
A string
and it's like it makes things louder.
Yeah.
And so whenever you speak, everything sounds louder.
No, it sounds quieter.
And you do that.
And my friend can come through. If it comes through the water,
the vibration comes through.
The vibration comes through the wire or a string.
Yeah. Tell them, Evan.
Okay, so kind of messy, right? But I guarantee you, if I'd asked those children to give me three sentences, to give me a paragraph, we would not have that level of insight into what they were experiencing. There's some argument there, right? There's some disagreement. And we actually had a window into that, and they successfully showed what they were learning, which did include, for at least two of the three, vibration. There's a vibrating, transmission of sound across the string. I'm going to take just a couple more minutes. If you need to go, feel free. I'm not going to keep you much longer than 5 more minutes, but I just want to just finish up. I'm not going to play additional examples. This is one of my favorites. When we had a field trip to the zoo in second grade, and my daughter was recording. We were in our small group. The kids recorded as we went along, and she talked about how some of the flamingos have their legs cut off. And then we talked about that. It's like, we would have never known that if she hadn't recorded. It's beautiful. You can go listen to that later. This is one that we did on a vacation. We had a family reunion in Hawaii in 2009, and we were at the USS Arizona. And it's priceless, the things that a 5-year-old said. Now, why would I show a personal example? It's because of this. I want to challenge you today to set up at least one new sandbox to play with media, okay? And do that with your family. Interview your spouse. Interview your child. Interview your mom or dad, grandparent, okay? Because how are we going to get comfortable building this stuff? We got to play. And I believe we need to play in boxes that don't involve high stakes, like being in front of a crowd of kids or a crowd of adults. So in terms of blogging, Sylvia Duckworth is a fantastic visual note taker or sketch noter. They were using one of her pieces today at the Okla Ed session. lots of reasons students should blog. Giving them a voice, teaching digital citizenship. I'd say practicing digital citizenship. How are you going to learn to drive if you never get behind the wheel? You know, we can't stay in the classroom in driver's ed. We can't just talk about being safe and what to not do if we want to learn digital citizenship. We have to have places to actually practice. So here's the answer to your question, blogs. I recommend one of these three. KidBlog, like I said, I've used the last 2 years, but it does involve, it's like $20 a year, so that's not horrible. And honestly, I would rather pay for a good tool like that that won't go away than have it go away. Because I've had tools like that that we've used and, oh my gosh, they went out of business and now we can't use it anymore. Writeabout.com is a much smaller, they haven't taken investment funding, and there's a teacher out of Michigan and Arizona that have put it together. We're experimenting with it. I think KidBlog is more polished, and if you're going to start, I would actually probably go to KidBlog first. But I like Writeabout's approach that with a bigger audience, you know? If your kid writes about Minecraft, they could connect with other kids that are interested in Minecraft and get comments and feedback, rather than your blog sort of being this island to itself that nobody, you know, few people visit, and it doesn't receive a lot of comments. Blogger is free. That's the one that... you know, Google has. I'm using it for our STEM club this year. So if you go to stem.cassidy.com, this was last week. I didn't post from yesterday. But these are the catapults that the kids, you know, published, and you can kind of, you know, see things about what they've done. A classroom I've worked with a little bit in Marietta School in Stillwell. One of the pre-K teachers there, Miss Frederick, is publishing, you know, things that her kids are doing. These are pre-K kids. And she is using an app that I want to mention. I'm not going to have time to do a demo. The app is called Easy Blogger Junior. There is one for Easy Blog if you use EduBlogs or WordPress. Yes, it's $4. But what it lets you do is the kids take a picture and it reads to them and says, hi, touch your picture. You can be pre-literate. Would you like to talk about a picture or do you want to write something? And it connects to your YouTube channel. So you as the teacher have the YouTube channel and the Blogger account. It can be set up for you to approve. It's the fastest and easiest way I've seen to be posting stuff. And so it's called Easy Blogger Junior. So gone a little bit over time. I'd be happy to hang out and answer some questions. Please be in touch with me. I would love to help you as you are on this journey, because we're all on a journey, right, of communication with new tools and new media and how do we engage kids with it. I'd love to encourage you and provide you with some tools and resources and support, and also amplify the work that your students are doing, because that's how I've learned about this stuff, is by other teachers generously sharing. And as we become great, more contributors in that sharing process, we're going to bring more teachers along, okay, and hopefully help everybody, you know, do this in a safe way that is going to equip kids to be ready for tomorrow, which we don't know everything it includes, but it's definitely going to include digital communication and the need to be good digital citizens. So, thank you all very much.
Moving at the Speed of Creativity podcast are independently produced by Wesley Fryer and are licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Only license. Learn more at www.speedofcreativity.org. Moving at the Speed of Creativity podcast are independently produced by Wesley Fryer and are licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Only license. Learn more at www.speedofcreativity.org.